We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome into the RotoWire NFL podcast. I'm your host, John McCagney, joined as always by Mario Puig. We are sponsored and presented by our friends over at WinBet. We got a lot to get to today. Obviously, it's been roster cutdown week across the NFL. And also, Mario and I have been participating in the prestigious fantasy pentathlon put on by Derek Van Riper. We put a hold on it last year, but it's back for this year. A lot of big names, a lot of fun people in that league, you know, Scott Pianowski, Davis Maddox, Sammy Reed, bunch of good players in there, a lot of sharp players in there. So we'll get into our super flex auction that Mario and I participated in earlier on in this week. So again, a ton to get to here. Mario, I want to kick things off. We've seen some slight changes, some shifts, some adjustments to kind of outlooks for given teams, position groups over the last week or so. And I think Indianapolis is kind of where I want to start in light of the T.Y. Hilton injury. So with that in mind, first of all, how good are you feeling about your Paris Hilton share?
Very good, John.
Yeah, you got to be. I'm doing well, guys. I caught a red eye this morning. But Paris Campbell, how you feeling?
Oh, fine. I mean, I stopped getting more shares whenever that Wentz news came down because I already had a bunch and I still probably have a lot more than most people. I think he's hopefully less dependent on good quarterback play than the guys who might run further downfield. Not to rule out Paris Campbell going downfield because he actually might be their best deep threat, especially with Hilton out. So the idea that Campbell is strictly an underneath guy isn't true, but in that capacity he's definitely good, and hopefully Wentz on one leg, Eason, whoever it is, can get him those routes. And if he can get anything going further than like 12 yards downfield, that'll just be gravy. And I think it's more of a concern. I'm still more concerned for Pittman. Like I don't have Pittman ranked higher than Campbell because of Hilton getting hurt or, Pascal getting where I had Hilton. I'm not really responding to that way. It's just like, Pascal and Pittman are the same guys to me. Campbell's the same guy to me. Campbell was the only one I was buying. Even among Hilton, he was the only Campbell was the only Colts receiver I was buying for the price, because I see bad vibes with Carson Wentz, and so yep. I was going kind of with what I thought was the cheapest and also best option, but don't need any more exposure there.
Okay, no, that's a fair summation. I could definitely see where there's just kind of a knee-jerk reaction, especially with so many people drafting this coming weekend in their home leagues. You know, we're coming down to the final stretch of draft season. Could see some people just kind of noticing that T.Y. Hilton's going to be missing time and just kind of jump at the opportunity to go after Michael Pittman. But you wouldn't advise, bumping him up too much then?
I mean, if he had been going all this time at the same ADP as Hilton and Campbell, even I might have had some Pittman shares, but taking him in like the eighth round or wherever he always goes is just total non-starter to me. I don't really even know what the reasoning is supposed to be. I can't imagine it in any sense.
Well, no, and you've been consistent on that throughout, so we don't have to dive any further into that. Also, meant to give you kudos. I screenshotted your tweet yesterday and put it out there, but your tweet also obviously deserves the faves as well. But among those roster cuts, Tyron Johnson, someone that we talked about as kind of a guy to keep on your dynasty radar and maybe in your best ball radar, especially in deeper, bigger roster type of formats. He gets cut by the Chargers, ends up getting picked up by Jacksonville. What's your reaction there on both sides? Both how does Tyron Johnson fit in potentially with Jacksonville's receiving core? A lot of names there, a lot of kind of different types of receivers that they've assembled there. And then also when it comes to the Chargers, I thought that was a weird one for them to let him go.
Yeah, I can't really get any credit for Tyron going to Jacksonville because it's not like I foresaw him getting cut by the Chargers in the first place, but I'm off the Chargers offense now. I want nothing to do with it. Keenan Allen and PPR aside, I guess, because he's still a beast, but that's the slowest offense in the league, and Staley doesn't know what he's doing. He can't evaluate talent. He's making that team worse. He might be a good like strategist, schemer, whatever. But if you keep making your players worse over any given sample, it doesn't matter what kind of genius you are. And there's no reason to think he's the next. Obviously, he's a defensive coach, not an offensive coach. But there's no reason to think he's, especially with Joe Lombardi as his offense coordinator. The last time that guy was an offensive coordinator, he ran the Lions offense into the ground. And he's the only guy who managed to make Calvin Johnson unproductive. Like he made Joe Lombardi's offense made Calvin Johnson less productive than Golden Tate. That's the guy in charge of this offense, which is the slowest in the league. I like Herbert. I don't think he's bad or anything, but I think they're setting him up for failure by putting Josh Palmer, Keenan Allen, and Mike Williams on the field. Week one against Washington, I bet he gets hit a lot.
Man, okay. That's a drastic change. I mean, I feel like we had either been relatively optimistic or very optimistic depending on the week when it comes to the Chargers offense. But man, I think those details that you just mentioned, obviously the detail regarding the offensive coordinator, concerning of course, and then and his track record. So I don't know what seemed like one of the home run hires of this offseason with the Chargers linking up with, you know, probably the maybe trendiest coordinator on the market this past coaching cycle. And now it feels like this could be a failed experiment from the start.
I guess their defense could be good right away, but if you want to play slow, you're going to get red zone defense at your own 20. And there's a reason why we try to make the safeties get back. It doesn't get easier when the safeties are in your face every single play, especially like think of this. Mike Williams is their deep threat. And he's slow. He's not a fast deep threat. He takes a long time to get to the part of the field. And he's not useful before this part of the field either. He gets useful at like 20 yards downfield. He can't do anything before then. Right. And it takes him longer to get there than almost any other receiver who's in a similar function to him. That's a long time for Herbert to sit and wait and hope no one gets through that line. It's going to totally be an opposite dynamic from last year when he had a lot of Tyron Johnson and even Jalen Guyton running clearing routes. And if you want to just see what happens with a Mike Williams, Josh Palmer clearing route, I'm not going to say like Herbert will be bad, but he's not going to get the touchdown percentage that he had last year. He's going to get hit more than he got hit last year. And I think we're looking at a very plausible scenario where Keenan Allen stays like, I don't want to call him like inefficient because he was good, but Herbert stopped being able to land those deep throws and he started just throwing it at Keenan Allen because he couldn't figure out what else to do. And defenses were sitting on Keenan Allen because they're like, hey, Herbert's not throwing it anywhere else. And so that's why Keenan Allen's got all these games with like 14 targets for 8 catches and 60 yards in the second half of last year. I think he's looking at an entire season of that. And I still like Keenan Allen in PPR because I still think he'll catch 100 plus passes,
right?
But I'm worried it'll be for like 1,050 yards.
Yeah, I mean, all those details in mind. I mean, I already felt like it wasn't a great receiving core that they had in Los Angeles, but taking Tyron Johnson out of that equation and taking that speed dynamic out, and then if you would just quickly set the record straight on Josh Palmer because I feel like people might chase him just after seeing, you know, where he gets drafted, coming from an SEC school, potentially having that immediate role in this Chargers offense. Set the record there.
Well, I guess he's worth picking in a lot of formats and especially best ball because even though Palmer, I guess, might play something like 700 snaps, I don't think he'll be someone that you want in your starting lineup in redraft, unless, I guess, maybe Allen got hurt, something like that. But he doesn't do anything very well. He's not good. And I know that a coach like Staley thinks he sees something and thinks he knows better. And he may well be onto some particular thing, some little technique that is called for in this particular scheme. And maybe it's legitimately helpful to have that. But he's fixating on whatever it is that he thinks he sees, and he's ignoring all the other details which matter more. And specifically, I'm talking about Josh Palmer was a far below baseline player last year for Tennessee as a fourth-year player. He wasn't as old as some fourth-year players. I don't think he turns 22 for like a few days here. But he was a fourth-year player. And before then, he was behind Juwan Jennings and Marquez Callaway. And I know people are kind of convincing themselves that Callaway is like a star receiver or something, but he's probably not. And Josh Palmer was worse than him. It was, to be fair, when Juwan Jennings and Marquez Callaway were there, Josh Palmer was above baseline in that scenario as the wide receiver three, though. And when the spotlight got put on him the next year, he fell through the floor. He was a drain on the offense. Velus Jones or whatever his name is, the freshman Tennessee receiver, they were both above baseline. Palmer was dragging the passing game down. And he had a few good games. I mean, it was largely dragged down by a few really bad games, but that makes sense. It's like defenses adjusted to what he was doing. They started sitting on the routes that he could catch in the beginning of the year. Like, I think he had a big game against South Carolina or something like that. And then they stopped, the plays stopped happening. And people who rationalize that terrible Josh Palmer pick in the third round like to say, like, oh, but the Tennessee quarterback play was so bad. Juwan Jennings and Marquez Callaway didn't need that excuse. Velus Jones and the freshman last year didn't need that excuse. Why does Palmer, as a fourth-year player, need that excuse? And why, as a guy who with 4.55, 4.57 kind of speed, do we think that there's any upside here? There isn't. He might be an okay player. He might give you some like decent reps, but he's a wide receiver 4 or 5 on a good team, and this isn't going to be one.
Man, okay. All right, there it is. There's the Juwan Jennings take there, and I do agree with the people that say the Tennessee's quarterback play was atrocious,
but oh, totally.
That doesn't absolve the sins, like you mentioned, when it comes to Palmer just being...
He still was below the line that poor quarterback play was, you know? It's like those other guys weren't below the line. It was only him.
And... Right, and no one else... I mean, none of those other guys got drafted as highly as him. Correct.
Right. So. Callaway went undrafted, even though he's a better athlete and was more productive. Juwan Jennings got the 7th round pick, but yeah, he's not, unless he's making it happen at tight end, he's probably not an NFL player really, but good college player, I guess.
Yeah, no, he was pretty fun there for a minute. So that'll do it as far as the Chargers discussion is concerned. And or I guess tying it off, how do you see Tyron Johnson fitting in Jacksonville?
Well, we'll see if he even stays there. They could cut him for all I know. I'm not sure what Urban Meyer thinks he's doing at receiver, but he clearly wanted to get some speed there. Tyron Johnson was the number one receiver recruit in his draft, his recruiting class. And I'm guessing Meyer remembers him. And if Meyer wanted downfield speed, Tyron Johnson should be able to give him that. I guess, to be fair, there is possibly some sort of off-field complication with Tyron Johnson. Like, I don't know if coaches just hate him. Like, don't like him as a person or something. I know that Staley was apparently getting mad because he was talking too much trash in joint practices. But if there isn't anything more substantial than that, then I guess defer to Tyron Johnson's talent, which I think is beyond any real question. And I don't know. I guess I still think DJ Chark is unchallenged as the downfield guy there. But at least Tyron Johnson gives him a second player who can run further than 20 yards. Like, a lot of people are thinking like, oh, Laviska Shenault's the next Dez Bryant. It's going to be him. No, Laviska's like a rich man's Mohamed Sanu. And I know people don't want to hear that, but Mohamed Sanu was good. Being a better version of him is fine. It's not an insult. But that downfield part was a place only Chark could get to. Jones couldn't really go beyond the intermediate either. So having Tyron there, I don't think he's going to steal snaps from Chark. But at the very least, if Marvin Jones is nicked up or something, I would imagine Tyron takes the field in that case.
Okay. All right. So that's definitely something to keep an eye out for in Jacksonville. And then We do have a viewer question here from Brandon Reed. Could Ramondre Stevenson pop off for New England in week one? What say you?
Well, I'm definitely a lot more optimistic about Stevenson's chances now that they traded to Sony Michel.
Right.
So very different scenario after that move. And even if Bill Belichick is still stingy toward rookie running backs, he's only, you know, a Damian Harris injury away at the very most. So I guess there's a chance that if he can get his foot in the door, he can kind of keep it there and kind of like carve out a little more room as the season goes on. But in week one, it seems like it's maybe asking a lot to me. I also don't really expect New England. I don't know. I don't know how I expect that game to go. I should say, like, obviously I was surprised by Cam Newton being cut, but I was surprised that they named Mac Jones the starter. I actually did think they would have to cut Cam Newton if they named Mac Jones the starter. I'm surprised they took it that way. Maybe the vaccine thing had something to do with it. I don't know. But the team is worse in the meantime, and I know people are seeing it the opposite way and the wrong. The Patriots didn't name Mac Jones the starter because he's the better player now. They named him the starter because there were a handful of political and logistical considerations to make, and they were legitimate. I'm not saying they're wrong for, like, choosing to try to develop Mac Jones and make this his team and just see where it goes, because he's a really good prospect, I think. But in the meantime, their probability of extending drives and scoring points has gone down. So I'm a little concerned about that Miami matchup. I think it might be a bit of a sluggish game for their offense. And if they run the ball like 40 times, then Stevenson gets in. But otherwise, I think they're going to have to give as many reps as possible to Harris, who is definitely better in the meantime than Stevenson, I think.
Yeah, I think week one would be a bit aggressive to start Stevenson in your redraft leagues. Obviously, if you've been stashing best ball shares, then you don't have to worry about that necessarily. But I don't think that week one rookie non-first round running back is, even with the runway being cleared for him having a role and potentially having that goal line role, I still don't think that in most formats, most like 10, 12, 14 team home league, even that you're going to really feel the need to put Stevenson over someone that you drafted in the first 10 rounds.
I should have checked. I can't look at the moment, but if Brandon Bolden made the team, I would be very worried about him running ahead of Stevenson.
Oh, the Brandon Bolden, the inconvenient truth, apparently.
It's what he's for.
Right. Unreal. Let's see. Let's get on over to Detroit. So of the other notable cuts from this week, what was already kind of a shaky Lions pass catching group became even more anonymous, I guess, if nothing else, with the decision to cut Breshad Perriman earlier this week. So really, as it stands right now, Detroit is just running with, they're going zero wide receiver as their own NFL football team. It's a very bold choice what they're doing in Detroit. But I mean, is there anything to take away from that move when it comes to anyone moving up, moving down, Tyrell Williams, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Quintez Cephas, anything like that?
I can't really see it changing much for Tyrell or Amon-Ra St. Brown. And if they do give Amon-Ra St. Brown reps outside ahead of Cephas, A, I'd be surprised. B, I don't think he'll do very well with them. Like, St. Brown had some pretty concerning workout numbers, and I know they're not everything, but it's really bad when you have poor workout numbers as a smallish receiver. Like, if you're 220, go ahead and run a 4.58, who cares? But if you're 197 or whatever St. Brown was at the pro day track and you're running a 4.61, like, you don't really want, that's almost like Isaiah Ford territory. And Isaiah Ford was a really good college player before he turned out to not be any good in the NFL. And I think St. Brown will be better than that, probably by quite a bit, but people are taking him not just first among the Lions receivers, but like way ahead of Tyrell, and they dodged a bullet, I guess, and credit to them for taking St. Brown instead of Perriman all this time. But I still don't think it's going to be a good pick for its own part. And in any case, Cephas has been running ahead of St. Brown in two wide sets, and that makes sense. And I don't even know why Cephas works outside being slow as he is, but it's like he really is good at just almost like the Marvin Jones kind of routes, but Marvin Jones was kind of fast, so it's a little bit of a stretch. But all the same, Cephas is just explosive enough to, for some reason, work on the outside, on the sideline, up to like 15 yards. And yeah, you're not giving them fly routes exactly, but that's what Tyrell Williams and apparently Khalif Raymond are for. So I think Cephas could actually, I mean, for the price, he's almost my favorite option in that receiving group because he can definitely play. And I guess you might even say, like, because of his lack of speed, he should stay in the part of the field where Goff can throw it. Like, Goff might just see Tyrell 25 yards downfield and say, I can't do that. Where's everybody else? And Cephas might be there.
Oh, that's it. No, that's a really good point. His skill set could definitely mesh with Goff. You know, we obviously know that Goff, not the greatest downfield passer for sure. So
it's funny to see how much of the St. Brown hype is specifically like Jared Goff can't throw it more than 4 yards. So they have to give him. If St. Brown catches 80 passes, it's going to be for like 650 yards or something.
Yeah. And like two, maybe three touchdowns. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
PPR, he's interesting, but like an underdog when he's been going like the 13th round all off season. Like if we were doing like a Devy thing from like 2 years ago when it was still just like 5-star Amon-Ra St. Brown, that would have made more sense. But yeah, he's got a thin line between whatever he's going to be and what Isaiah Ford turned out to be.
Man. Okay. Yeah. So that very different than, yeah, like you were saying a year or two ago, yeah, going into last year, he was definitely one of our top receiving prospects, but you know, things have obviously changed since then. One last roster shakeup thing to get to before we get to recapping that salary cap draft over in the pentathlon. So the Irv Smith injury necessitated the Vikings to make a move at tight end. Now they've got both Tyler Conklin and Chris Herndon. Sorry. Yeah, I'm all over the place today. But when it comes to Herndon, as a one-time truther, what's going on?
I thought he looked really busted last year. It's hard for me to know. He also has had a pretty long injury history, even going back to Miami. Like, he didn't do any pre-draft testing for his draft before the Jets took him in the fourth round because he had some kind of busted ligament or another. I don't know what. When I watched him last year, A, he looked checked out. B, he was blocking a lot more than he was previously. And C, he looked very slow. Like, I basically didn't recognize him. So I don't know if he was playing hurt. I guess he could just be bad. I don't really know. He was productive as a pass catcher before last year. And if there ever was something, I guess it could come back. But in that particular offense, and with Irv Smith not expected to miss is he expected to miss the whole year? I guess I didn't follow up on that.
It's a pretty lengthy recovery for the meniscus because he's not getting the one with the quicker recovery. He's getting the complete.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I can't hate the Herndon pick exactly, but I think the way I'm building my teams at this point, I just wouldn't really be in the market for a tight end where I'd need to take him, but if he's healthy, I think he's a pretty good player. It's just I'm a little worried in the meantime that he's going to be, I don't know, like 70% of the Irv Smith role rather than the entirety of it, because Herndon, even if he's decent, still probably isn't particularly close to Smith's level.
So I agree with that. And I think if you were to like paint like a positive case for Herndon, it would be a look at this Vikings offense where the target tree is pretty narrow. I mean, obviously Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen and Dalvin Cook are going to be comprising a really high percentage of those targets. But we know that Kirk Cousins has used a tight end in the past. This is an offense that uses them in routes. So do we think that if we squint hard enough that, you know, we do end up seeing that case? I mean, regardless of your roster builds.
Yeah, I mean, especially in like two tight end leagues, what can't really think anybody is eligible in that kind of format. So as a former late round Chris Herndon advocate who is somewhat disillusioned after last year and is kind of like increasingly concerned with his injury history, I don't want to recommend it exactly, but I don't think it's like a criticizable gamble to take.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That definitely makes some sense there. All right, before we get on over to our pentathlon recap for our Superflex salary cap draft, we got a quick message from our sponsors.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, Mario. So let's break this down. It was a lot of fun. We did it Monday night, 12-teamer. $200 budget for this one. And again, the starting lineups have a quarterback and a super flex, in addition to having to start a pair of tight ends. And then it's pretty standard from there. And the scoring itself is 0.5 PPR as well. So a lot of sharp players in that room, like we mentioned before. So Mario, leading things off, looking at how your roster shaped up. So at quarterback, you have Trevor Lawrence, you have Calvin Ridley, A.J. Brown, Jalen Waddle, Alvin Kamara, James Robinson, Jonnu Smith, Gerald Everett, D.J. Chark, and Tyrod Taylor as your quarterbacks. And you also have Jared Goff. We'll have to get to that in a moment. I got to hold your feet to the fire for a moment on that one. But either way, did you expect going into that auction to build your roster that way, especially in a super flex league where quarterback, I think people can get almost too fixated. It feels like you almost went the other way and just went with guys with that plausible upside. And then married them up with some guys who just give you like a little bit of like passable floor and allowed you to really spend big at other positions.
Yeah. The Goff pick was an accident. Not really an accident. I just thought someone would bid $3 and they didn't. Someone nominated him at one and I bid two and then no one bid three. Yeah. On it, even though
just getting stuck pricing for
it. I had to bid three for Tyrod. I think Bridgewater went for like 7 or 8 and Ben Roethlisberger went for like 7 or 8. So I was like, oh, Goff should go for 3 or 4 and everybody disagreed. So I'm stuck with him for now. I don't especially anticipate using him, but whatever. We'll see how it goes. Week 1, I know I'm just apparently going with the Jacksonville Houston stack, and I don't mind that at all. It's two stupid defenses. Both teams are dumb enough to make their offenses bad too, to be fair. But yeah, Tyrod, Trevor Lawrence, week 1, DJ Chark, hopefully in there. I like my chances enough of getting off to a decent start, but nothing that I did was especially intentional. I didn't know what I was doing. Like, I don't know. I haven't done auction super flex as far as I remember. Like, I've only done the Scott Fishbowl, I think, and that snake draft, of course. So, I tried to keep an open mind and sort of do my best to just sort of watch for whatever looked like an opportunity to me. And I thought Calvin Ridley, AJ Brown price points were that. Like, I thought, I think I got them both for like $32, something like that. And whereas, like, Alvin Kamara, I paid $52. So, AJ Brown and Calvin Ridley to me are both, I don't know, like top 16, 15 kind of players. So getting them and Alvin Kamara, I know I'm lacking depth, but if I can have three of my, like, one of my top three players and an additional two in my top 15, 16, I thought, you know, as long as I get actual starting quarterbacks and a little bit of like a running back lottery ticket here and there, I thought maybe it'll work, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, Stars and Scrubs is definitely the central thesis that I work from when it comes to building out a football auction roster. If you sit back too long and you just hammer the mid tier, you just end up getting a team that will get you into sixth place. Like you'll get a respectable team that way, but you're lopping off your upside, because you have to think about it in a way where, do I really want a roster where if this was a snake draft, I would have no first, second, or third round players, right? You know? So you have to just, even if it like stings to pony up X percentage of your budget left, you still need to remember that everyone else is doing that too. And there's a certain point where saving it ends up hurting you. So you need to keep that in mind.
Yeah. I might've taken it too far in the other way. I mean, we'll see. I don't have much at tight end, obviously. I like Jonnu Smith a lot, but I don't even like Everett. I also accidentally ended up with Gerald Everett.
Yeah, I know. You got some guys that you're on
he
Twitter record.
Way higher than like I ever expect in every other draft and auction. And this is a two tight end league. Someone's going to bid like 12 on Gerald Everett. And I got him for four, which, to be fair, I don't even dislike the price. Like,
that's actually pretty good. Yeah
I mean, I'm like, I don't even think he's good, but whatever, it's $4, so we'll see. I did not know what I was doing, and I'll be pleasantly surprised if this team is any good.
I think with what your stars have to offer right off the bat, with Ridley, with AJ Brown, with Kamara, and then with James Robinson, we'll go back to him in a second, like that's going to be tough for everyone to contend with right off the bat. It's just a matter of how your tight ends and your quarterbacks shake out. But I think what you did at the skill spots, really, really strong core there. And then Jalen Waddle too. I mean, he's someone that maybe not week one, he's
I'm actually rolling with him week one, because they don't have Will Fuller, and I don't know. It's probably not going to work, but I'm such a Waddle truther. I'm just, you know, You haven't seen Dr. Strangelove yet, have you?
No, that's one of the Kubrick movies that I've missed out on so far.
I'm the guy doing the cowboy thing, flying out of the plane.
You see, most of my references, I'm at least able to learn from The Simpsons. So there is an episode where Homer jumps on one of those and flies down, and it lands on like a bunch of beatnik hippies. It's a pretty good scene. Yeah.
That's something you got to watch, though. It's the best movie ever.
I am home once again this week, and I do believe we have that on DVD. So I'd have to check that out. But we also have the Beavis and Butthead full collection. So I don't know. Nice.
Else aged pretty well? Daria.
Yeah, I enjoy it. Like that's on a couple of streaming services. I've watched that a decent bit this past winter, and I was like, yeah, no, this holds up nice. They got
segued
some
from that into finally learning about King of the Hill, which is, of course, I feel stupid for taking 25 years or whatever, but that also rules.
Yeah, it's got some. I can't dive into it with both feet the same way I do some of the other, like the Matt Groening Simpsons or Futurama, Yeah, King of the Hill, of course, is tremendous as well. I don't know you, that's my purse, and so on.
I like anyway. Dale Gribble is just the best character from anything.
He's a king. He's just phenomenal. Let's see. Anything else you wanted to add to your team before we switch on over to mine? Or actually, I did want to ask you about James Robinson. So obviously, the way that every auction, to quote Scott Pianowski, is a snowflake. No auction is the same. So that, you know, not only are they taking place at different times, but people just have different strategies with how they're employing, how they're attacking certain positions. Maybe someone goes up in the bidding order much later than you would have expected, and you end up getting a deal off of it. I mean, our dollar days, there are some seriously good players going really late. I was able to capitalize on that. We'll get to that. But James Robinson,
I blew it. But yeah, I love.
I mean, you couldn't have seen it coming. But James Robinson, $28. DeAndre Swift right after him for $23. How do you feel about how that shook out?
Well, it's half point PPR, and I would have bid more on Swift, but I already had Robinson, and I knew I didn't have enough funds to get into that one. I was hoping someone else would bid more, but I just didn't have enough money to do it. But I'm okay with Robinson at 29. I mean, there was no way to know what Swift would have gone for, and oftentimes in scenarios where, not because anyone cares what I think or even knows what I think, but it just feels like so often in auctions when I wait for one particular pet target of mine that I don't get them for the price that I think I will. And so in this, I tried to take more of a sort of like open-minded objective value assessment of the players. And I was like, I was probably looking at some other running back who I consider about as good as Robinson, who went for like 35. And I kind of just rationalized on that basis. But yeah, if I could get it back and switch to Swift for that price and have another $6 to spend on that insane spree of $1 bids at the end, that would have been nice. But I love James Robinson. I think he's the real deal. So I'm not exactly concerned about him. I'm just also high on Swift. If it had been PPR instead of half point PPR, that would have stung a little worse.
Okay. I think that's about right. And I think Swift right now is getting a bit of an injury discount. I think people are the closer we get to the season, I think the more people are starting to get concerned that we're not hearing that he's, you know, fully 100% ready to rock, that type of thing. Some other running backs who went in that similar tier, Gus Edwards, newly among that tier, of course, after the unfortunate J.K. Dobbins injury last weekend. Gus Edwards goes for 21. On the other end of that spectrum, Najee Harris goes for 39 to Pat Fitzmaurice. Looking elsewhere, some of these other running backs, Chris Carson also went for 23. So same bid as DeAndre Swift. And I got Edwards-Hilaire at 29. So that kind of gives you an idea of how that particular grouping of running backs, maybe they're not in the same tier depending on how you're looking at it, but that's kind of how it shook out as far as the RB market is concerned.
Yeah, I tried to take a couple lottery tickets at the end. I was fortunate enough to get Alex Mattison and Malcolm Brown as $1 bids, and I had to waiver bid $3 on Ty Johnson after the draft. But it's kind of a shallow bench, I guess, for a league with so many starting spots. So I don't have any particular expectation for this league because I've never really been in one like it. But I don't know. It might just be ignorance in the meantime, but I think this team could be okay. It's like one of those things. I need everybody to stay healthy for the most part.
And well, the thing with the pentathlon in general is that, you know, this is only 20% of the bottom line for you. So if you're able to do well in the spread, super spread, best ball, DFS component of it, and survivor, then, you know, you're fine. So if you're just like treading water, if you just like kind of hit a single as far as this super flex league is concerned, that then you can still definitely be in the running for the overall. Before we get on over to my squad here, we got a couple messages from our friends leading things off, our friends over at WinBet. There's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions, and even more so, making the right decision. Listen up, folks, I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WinBet, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WinBet is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. WinBet brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more at your fingertips. You want to break from sports betting? Head into WinBet's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down on blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WinBet is currently available in 6 states. That's Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia, all while rapidly expanding. At WinBet, the possibilities are limitless. WinBet is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. Download WinBet now. That's W-Y-N-N-B-E-T. WinBet, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's Fantasy Podcast. We got a message also from our friends over at Dynasty Owner. Are you tired of the same fantasy football leagues that get canceled after a year or so? Well, if so, Dynasty Owner has your back. Go to dynastyowner.com. New leagues for the 2021 season are forming now. Dynasty Owner unites the fun and excitement of fantasy football with the skill and strategy of the front office by incorporating a salary cap and real NFL player salaries for diehard fantasy football fans that want the real GM experience. Dynasty Owner adds a whole new level of strategy. Are you worried you won't be able to find anyone to play in your league with? Don't worry. Dynasty Owner can help fill your league with fantasy football enthusiasts like yourself. You won't have to worry about finding enough players. You can choose to start a league, join an existing, or purchase a team from a previous owner. If you're serious about joining the big leagues, go to dynastyowner.com/rotowire. That's dynastyowner.com/rotowire and start your dynasty today. And a message from our friends over at Sleeper. What do your fraternity brothers, Steve, Katie from work, and your grandma all have in common? They're all waiting for that invite to your fantasy football league. There is no better way to hang out, no easier way to talk smack, and no more customizable platform to host your fantasy league on this year than Sleeper. Whether you have a redraft or a dynasty league that has been around for 10 years, Sleeper has everything you need in one app. Incredible commissioner tools and customizations, built-in messaging, support for snake draft, auction draft, and best ball leagues, blazing fast news, stats, and scores, all in a beautifully designed mobile app and website that makes every other app feel like a horse and buggy. Sleeper is the fastest growing fantasy sports platform for a reason, and all the cool commissioners are switching to Sleeper and not looking back. Don't just take my word for it. Download Sleeper on iOS or Android and see for yourself. You have nothing to lose. It's free. All right, Mario, we are back getting into my team from the Superflex auction in the Pentathlon. So this is something that I hadn't done just yet, and this wasn't like a full stack or anything necessarily, but it was a pairing nonetheless, and I did want to make sure that I left this draft with at least one of what I consider to be an elite fantasy quarterback. So Josh Allen ended up being that guy. According to our auction values on the website, by the way, for any viewers, listeners, customers, highly recommend those. Just plug in your league settings and it will kind of give you a much better guide than whatever hosting service you have, not to call out their projected auction values anywhere else, but it really, really tightens things up for you and allows you to see where the value is relative to the room that you're drafting against. And Allen, to me, seemed like a strong buy at 37. And then after him, I got Stephon Diggs for a little bit over what would have been expected. But I was cool with that just based on the fact that I was going to be pairing him with Josh Allen. And I also led things off with Nick Chubb. And I basically went to the mat for Nick Chubb. Like I waited around for about half an hour before making my first buy. I was in on a handful of players up until then. But once we got past like the DeAndre Hopkins section, this goes a little bit out of order, but Chubb was this 26th person nominated, and at that point there was enough money off of other people's boards to where I felt like, okay, this is the time to dive in. It's a half point PPR league, I'm just going for it. So I ended up going Chubb at 41. So my premier buys ended up being Chubb, Allen, Stephon Diggs, and I also mentioned Clyde Edwards-Helaire for 29 a little bit earlier. So
I think
how's that start?
I think Andrews is a premium buy too in this format. So yeah, I think your team's probably better than mine because it's a lot more balanced and has like actual leading upside at quarterback and tight end. And then not even really at much expense of receiver or running back. Yeah, I mean, having Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, Mark Andrews, Chubb, and Edwards-Helaire should be a pretty solid foundation, and that's not to skip the potential of, like, I think people are really under-acknowledging the probability that Melvin Gordon sort of just starts all year for the Broncos, and I don't know why he would start less late in the year than early. Like, the idea that oh, Javonte Williams will of course start the second half. Like, on what basis? Like, when, why would we assume that? Why wouldn't, should, if he's going to start in the second half, why can't he start the first half at the very least? Like, I don't, if anything, you should be more optimistic about Javonte Williams if you believe that. I don't personally believe it. And I saw Teddy Bridgewater's comparing him now to Alvin Kamara. So he's Alvin Kamara and Nick Chubb and Marshawn Lynch and Michael Jordan, whatever else people have comparison wise. Surely he's one of those or something in between, whatever. Gordon, though, is, even in his slowed down state, probably about as fast as Javonte Williams. And he's played NFL running back a long time. They're paying him a lot. I think if they really wanted to put Gordon on the bench, they would have just cut him by now. So we'll see. But I think you could have Denver starting running back as a flex play in addition to Edwards-Helaire and Chubb, and didn't have to pay a whole lot for much of it.
No, exactly. Yeah, he was one of those end game guys that I was able to snag, because I did get to a point in the auction where I needed that second quarterback. Again, this is that super flex league, and I was, relative to the amount of roster spots that I have left, I needed to save at least a few bucks for my second quarterback. And, you know, as you mentioned, some of the market pricing got a little bit wacky there for a minute when, you know, guys like Roethlisberger are going for, you know, upwards of 10 bucks, Bridgewater, $6. So I was like, oh boy, like, I don't know if I have quite that much to go after it. But even still, as I was waiting, basically that led to a lot more people getting down into their dollar days part of the auction. So I was able to get Carr at the 160th NOM for $3. And at that point, I still had about 20 bucks to play with for like five or six roster spots. So when people threw out guys like Melvin Gordon or threw out Jamal Williams for a dollar and hoped that they could sneak him by, I just, it's not that I'm huge on either of those guys, but I just simply had the salary to make it work and end up grabbing those guys. And they're certainly useful. I mean, regardless of whether you think they're sexy plays or upside guys or whatever, they're still, you know, viable NFL running backs and guys that you can throw into your lineup when you need them.
Yeah. My Jamal Williams criticisms were always within the very specific frame of, oh, he's going to start ahead of DeAndre Swift. He's going to make DeAndre Swift only get like 5 carries a game. And that stuff's really funny, but of course he is actually going to play and he is actually going to get the ball. And if he's priced according to the expectation that he's not starting ahead of Swift in any meaningful sense, then that's fine. You know, it's like, it was almost like more a defense of Swift than even a criticism of Jamal Williams at any normal, at any reasonable price, which this certainly is.
Yeah, I thought so as well. So yeah, no, that's a good summation of you know, where you've been on Jamal Williams and his fit in Detroit. Before we finish out breaking down my team and a couple other interesting buys from the auction, our friend Ethan H. wants to know, better first round draft strategy with the 6th pick in a 10-man, Travis Kelce, Zeke, or Davante Adams?
So nothing wrong with any of those guys, but I think I would almost lean Kelce because maybe I got to think this through a little. A 10-team league versus a 12-team, that raises kind of like the baseline scoring at tight end relative to 12, because you got two starters who would be a backup in this league, I would imagine. So if there's any margin of production between those, you know, like 8 to 12 tight ends, then maybe maybe there's more leverage with the elite tight ends. And if nothing else, the replacement level at running back and receiver should also be higher in this league. So nothing wrong with going Devontae or Zeke, but I think I might, you know, assuming like there's no Kamara or something there, no Derrick Henry, I think I might go Travis Kelce, just because your second round running back option might look a lot like first round running back options in other leagues.
Would you still go after, is Eckler still a high value second round pick now after what we talked about earlier?
Yeah, I should have said more clearly. I'm not truly, like, I don't think like Eckler's going to have a bad year and Keenan Allen's going to have a bad year. It's more like, I can't take him over the players that I would need to get him in a draft, but I think Eckler is a beast and I think he's going to have a really good year. It's just more like I'm not high enough on him to take him ahead of Aaron Jones or somebody like that. Certainly not Jonathan Taylor. But if you can get Eckler in the second round of a draft, 10 team league or otherwise, I can't see that hurting. Although if it's PPR, maybe he doesn't get quite that far. If he does, it makes it all that much more of an obvious, you know, I'm guessing there are a few really good running back options in the second and third round, but he, if he's there, could be the best one, I guess.
Okay. And then rounded it out again, for Ethan, Kelce would be, the RotoWire stamp of approval. Sixth pick in that 10-man format. Again, thank you, Ethan, for chiming in. All right, let's get on over, finishing it out. So at receiver, I also went to the mat for Jerry Jeudy. Obviously didn't have to go quite as hard to get him as, you know, some of the other more elite guys, the bigger purchases that I made. But even still, Jeudy went for 15. That was $3 less than what Mark Andrews went for. I kind of just piggybacked those two particular gets. But I'm a little bit worried about my third receiver spot. I have at my disposal both Bryan Edwards. Now I have Paris Campbell too, which I feel a lot better about now. And then also Mecole Hardman. So it'll be hard to pick between those three on a given week. I feel like that's kind of my biggest qualm, but I do have plenty of faith in all three of those guys individually. And then I have Michael Thomas stashed as well.
Yeah. I mean, if Thomas comes back to any measurable effect, then it should be a borderline clinching effect on your team being among the best in the league, because I still think there's a way to make it work between a rotating cast, if necessary, of Hardman, Bryan Edwards, Paris Campbell, maybe even some other guy who pops up over the waiver wire over the course of the year. It will be, like you said, difficult to know ahead of time which one might go off, and that Cleveland matchup for Mecole is so hard to figure out, because it's like, I don't think he's going to see Denzel Ward, but maybe he will. Maybe Kansas City just still doesn't use him that much more than last year. It's hard to know. I almost would be tempted. Man, I guess Bryan Edwards has a bad matchup though with the Ravens. It's gonna be tough to figure out. There's something to think about there. But I guess the good news is you can expect above average contributions from pretty much all your other starting units. So if you must take a hit there, you probably can.
Yeah, I'm thinking around the same thing. You know, this is more just theater of the mind, but maybe Cleveland doesn't want to see Denzel Ward get his feelings hurt by Tyreek Hill, and the, so then they do end up sticking him on Mecole.
Yeah, it's an interesting game to think about. I guess we got Week 1 coming up pretty quick now. Yeah. I think we're both Mecole defenders for the most part, but it's always, you know, the context is crucial with these takes, and it's like, I don't mean to say he's some kind of slam dunk or anything. It's not that. I do think there's a way that he could have a worst case scenario of like Az-Zahir Hakeem or something like that, but until I see the Mecole critics start to speak of him in a way that is actually like, if they start to speak of him in a way that demonstrates that they know basic facts about him, then I'll start to get a little bit more nervous. But in the meantime, his haters are so nonsensical, I'm still pretty optimistic for him.
I know. And you know, you look at the rash of receivers that were taken before him in that 2019 draft, and, you know, Hakeem Butler.
Yeah. Oh, right. But okay. So yeah, I got to say, so many people who hate Hardman just hate him because they're like, they wanted DK Metcalf, which is understandable, but it's like not his fault and doesn't have anything to do with him. So there's a lot of people who just, it's a coalition of people who spent too many early picks the last 2 years on him and are now pissed off at him, and people who had him ranked low in Devy rankings and hate him for going ahead of their favorite players. So it's like Hardman's got the world against him right now for some stupid reason. And I don't know, I'm rooting for him. I don't find his critics to be particularly sympathetic.
Yeah, there's a weird through line there among the
just getting so mad at this fourth year 22-year-old receiver because he's not paying off in the sixth round of your draft. Like that's a you problem, man.
For real. And you know, if nothing else, look at his get up walking into the 2019, or I guess the 2020 Super Bowl. He's like a full-on Air Force outfit.
He's such a hard worker. I don't understand why people dislike him so much. But anyway, you want to see, I don't know if there's footage available, but one thing that I remember very vividly was watching Steve Smith his rookie year, and he like fumbled a kickoff or something, and I remember like Panthers might have been, the Panthers fans might have been like booing him or something, and the announcers were just like, this Steve Smith, I don't know what you can do with him. He's just a hothead. He's talented, sure, but what can you do? He just doesn't know how to play receiver. And then, you know, sometimes players aren't the same at age 21 and 22 as they are at 23 and 24. And, you know, being fast and a hard worker certainly helps.
Yeah, I remember this is on the other side of the ball, but I remember being at a game Ed Reed's rookie year, and he was running an interception back for a touchdown, and he held the ball out, and it got knocked out.
He's doing the high legs and
yes,
everything too.
and it got knocked out of the end zone, and everyone's like, cut him. Yeah.
He doesn't respect the game or anything, probably.
He cost us 6 points against the Bengals. Unreal. As if he wouldn't go on to have like 1,000 pick sixes against the Bengals and everybody else.
He did it the wrong way, John.
That's right.
He wasn't solemn enough when he did it.
Yeah, you show less joy when you like do the ultimate achievement in your sport.
He's depressed as me. Yeah.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Let's see. Looking around, you know, obviously we're at the later stage of draft season now. So I just wanted to toss out a couple interesting buys from this draft. So Marquez Callaway, who we kind of touched on earlier on the show, or more so just merely mentioned, but he goes for 11 in this one. And for context, that's the same as Michael Gallup. It's $2 more than Michael Pittman as well. So your thoughts when it comes to how the room read the value properly or improperly when it comes to Callaway.
Callaway's a weird case, and I like him overall. Like he was among the undrafted players last year. He was one of my favorites because he, at the time, I thought he was going to be a potential like outside oriented wide receiver three, because he was basically a deep route specialist at Tennessee and he was really good at it. So I thought, you know, maybe he can't take big volume, but he can hurt teams on the sideline. He was like a pretty good athletic tester. Nothing great, nothing bad. In so far as that projection goes, I don't think it merits the hype that he's getting right now, but there is a chance that he's just the next Sean Payton guy at receiver. And if he wants Marquez Colston to, not to take, you know, merit credit away from these guys, like Marquez Colston was a legitimately good player, and Willie Snead when he was there, Kenny Stills when they were there, they were doing an actually good job. But the thing is, Sean Payton can just kind of make a receiver way more productive than they should be if he chooses. And Callaway could be his choice. I don't, it seems like the beat writers think so. I guess we'll see. I still think Traquan Smith will be like the better of the two, but it's only in a normal offense. If it's Callaway gets the Thomas role and Traquan's still doing everything he's been doing, then yeah, Callaway's a smash value. If it's more like we're back to square one, Traquan's here, we're going to give him a shot now, then I think Traquan being bigger, faster, more productive in college probably takes the lead. But I think they could both be really good choices, because I don't have any faith in any non-Kamara part of that offense, that team, really. Just the offensive line, Kamara, those two receivers, I don't want anything to do with anybody else.
No, that's fair. That's kind of how I've approached the offense for the most part. I do have some Troutman. I even have him in this league, but you know, I just kind of went with injury
him
discount.
If we could get like some assurances on his injury and role.
Yeah.
Like if they don't use him, that would be so weird. Anyway, we'll see. I think Troutman could be good. I just got discouraged by the Juwan Johnson talk, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And Juwan Johnson was a 5-star recruit long, long ago.
Yeah. It's like a poor man's Ricky Seals Jones.
Got
to build around him.
Love that.
I'm not buying the Juwan Johnson hype exactly.
Okay. And then looking elsewhere, some other guys that went for similar or even less. So Callaway ended up going for a buck more than Chase Claypool, and $3 more than one Kenny Golladay, who went for $8.
Yeah, I wanted to get Golladay. I know that the Giants are going to be ugly as hell, and I hate Daniel. I don't hate Daniel. As a prospect, I hate Daniel Jones as much as anybody else, but Golladay is one of those guys who's like, as long as the quarterback chucks it at him, he'll probably be pretty productive, and they need to chuck it at him as much as they can, basically, to get some semblance of value out of that contract. So can't hit the broadside of a barn, maybe, but I'm hoping Kenny Golladay can still reel in a few of Jones's downfield chucks this year. And Claypool, more egregious yet. I mean, I like Callaway. It's probably not going to be a buy that like hurts the team that paid for him, but
it's more like a shame on the room as a whole. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if I hadn't mismanaged my funds, apparently I could have done my part to correct some of these prices, but I couldn't because I didn't have the money to push my luck that way.
Yep. To quote
Claypool, a big steal though. That's way too cheap on him.
To quote Ray from Trailer Park Boys, it's the way she goes, bud. So it's
the way she goes.
It's the freaking way she goes. But that's going to round things out for this week, or this Thursday edition of the RotoWire NFL podcast. Tomorrow, I got to say, your hat does look very clean. I know we talked about you had it in the wash when we recorded last week. So
yeah, looking I had good, to wash by the way, the Brewers hat. Because the detergent got lodged in it the first time, and I put it on and started to feel soapy before I realized.
Oh, no. Can't have that.
Yeah.
Well, it looks pristine now.
We're ready to post. We're ready to pod. It's locked in.
Until
I wash it next year.
So if you're listening only via audio, check out the YouTube. The hat does look phenomenal.
Don't look at the Brewers logo if it's going to frighten you. It's still a football podcast.
True. No, that's important to get that out there as well. But again, that is going to do it for this edition of the RotoWire NFL podcast. Again, brought to you by our friends over at WinBet. Andrew Laird and Scott Genstad will be rocking it out on Friday, and then Liz and Jeff back on Monday. Thanks for listening.
Try RotoWire today, free for 10 days. Get our premium tools, rankings, analysis, and breaking news alerts. No credit card required. Go to rotowire.com/try.